Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks. This is Bruce Kessinger here. Welcome to Sports Talk Saturday with Scott Morgenroth and our special guest, author, nurse, martial artist, and above all, an unabashed New York Giants fan. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm so happy to be here. Let's talk some Giants.
We'll get First, we are going to allow Scott Morgenroth to tell the folks out there how to reach him.
All right. Well, Danielle, like you, I have a YouTube channel too, but you go to www.southfloridatribune.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, South Florida Tribune, T-R-I-B-U-N-E, and you can follow me on Twitter, at Tribune South. So, Danielle, I have a YouTube channel too, and I guess the one thing about YouTube channels, we leave a lifelong legacy long after we are long gone in the eyes of Ernie Harwell. How about that?
Exactly. So you can always find us and find all our mistakes, right?
Mistakes, indeed, shortcomings, good stuff, all that other stuff. So,
and speaking of finding, right? I'm sorry. Speaking of finding people, Danielle, why don't you tell the folks out there how to find you?
You can always find me on Instagram at Birth of the Fae, FAE underscore novel, or at birthofthefae.com, or with my publisher, Four Horsemen. So that's the number four, Four Horsemen Publications. .com, and check me out and let me know exactly what you think of those New York Giants, because I'm sure there's a lot of people with a lot to say.
Okay, and I can be reached at holyroller91978@gmail.com or Facebook. So we'll get down to it. Your Giants, major overhauls there. You had a whole new coaching staff, and trying to upgrade that offensive line. And I unfortunately think you'd lost your number one draft pick to injury. Am I correct?
Yeah, Steve Doe's out for, well, MCL sprain, where they're saying 3 to 4 weeks, give or take-ish. So we'll kind of see how that whole thing goes. I'm hoping, I mean, with an MCL sprain, you want to be careful. Obviously, we don't want to rush him back anytime soon. But I'm hoping that it wasn't as bad. At first, when he went down, I was like, oh, my gosh, that's an ACL. Like, we're done. And I think the whole place collectively held our breath. And it was like, ugh. But it's not as bad as it looked. So he's out, I think, 3 to 4 weeks is what they're projecting with just an MCL sprain. So we dodged a bullet on that block.
Okay. And, why don't we give yourself a chance to give an honest assessment of where you think your team is going this year?
Oh, an honest assessment. Oh, it's always difficult, isn't it? I think Daniel Jones looks adequate. And that's the best I can – that's the nicest I can say right now. I really think it's going to depend. I mean, first game up is the Panthers. So, we'll have to see on that. I think we have to see what the wide receiving core is going to look like. Sterling Shepard is coming off. He passed his physical and was activated off the PUP list. So let's see what it looks like. We've had a lot of changes at wide receiver. We did pick up a Jalen Moore. So let's really see. I have not seen anything out of Galladay. That's been really, really disappointing. I'm not sure what the wide receivers are going to look like because Jones has not had a chance to really develop chemistry besides Stills. I think Stills looks really good. I think Bachman looks good. I'm excited for those two. But that's about it from a wide receiving standpoint. I can't be like, wow, look at us. We look so great. But the offensive line, we've had injuries every time I think that we've overhauled it. And I'm thinking, oh, we finally get it. Like, let's give the quarterback some protection. What a concept in football. We get an injury, something else happens. So I think it's going to depend Saquon, what his health status is. Can he cut the way he used to cut? That's really going to depend. Have we given him another running back to give us finally that thunder and lightning aspect instead of fog and drizzle, which is what we've had? We're going to have to wait and see. I think, can we really make a play for the NFC East? The NFC East, I think, overall is wide open. I have not, everybody's kind of saying, oh, the Cowboys have been riddled with injuries as well. So I'm not seeing somebody in the NFC to say, the NFC East at least, to be like, oh, that's the clear winner. So I think it's wide open. I don't think we'll be in last place this year, which, once again, what a concept for the Giants. But with the Giants, it's always, you know, a flash of genius followed by long stretches of mediocrity. So I'd like to think maybe we're getting there. We'll see.
All right. So,
well,
you know what, Danielle, I'm going to hit you with a barrage of football questions. I love the direction that the show's going in. Okay. So you're ready for a little bit of a segment called Rapid Fire. All right. Ready?
Oh, boy. Here we go. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been at this for 42 years. And by the way, we want to thank you, Giants, for taking Kenny Golladay off our hands from the Detroit Lions. We were more than happy to give you a gift there because he wasn't worth the money and he couldn't stay on the field. Sorry, Danielle, but it is what it is. So, but all right, let's talk about
That was Gettleman. That was a David Gettleman era. And I mean,
that's why he's no longer there. So, all right, so let's talk about the Giants a little bit. I know you have a big football game tomorrow at MetLife Stadium. I was only there a couple of weeks ago. It's called the Battle of the Undefeated, the Jets 2-0 against the Giants 2-0. You can classify that as the LOL category, but the one thing about tomorrow's game is you won't have to change locker rooms. So when these two teams play, whether it's preseason or not, how excited do they get to see them on the field at the same time? I can guarantee you won't even need a bicycle for them to get any gas over at that stadium since they'll be right across the stadium. But let's talk about the game tomorrow since it is on Sunday. How excited are you to get to see them play?
I'm always thrilled to see the Jets and the Giants play. I'm always happy to see these two teams play. Always. It's always excitement because there's always a certain sense of pride going into these games. I feel like each team is playing for the pride of New York. They want to be the media darling. So I think there's just always this sense of let's really go after it and see who's going to be the media darling of New York this season. I feel like they go in with like they're going to claim the back page of the Post by winning this game. I'm always excited, and I think the fans are always excited.
Yeah, well,
and we do have a fan. I was just going to say we have a fan from New Rochelle who's going to the game tomorrow. Dennis, he just left us with a little message here saying, sorry, Danielle, long ear for the G-men, and he's a Jets fan. So you're saying about the New York Pride is showing up here on my screen. So let's continue on that.
So, yeah, I mean,
have
like
fun,
I said
Dennis.
Before. Yeah, there you go, Dennis, have fun. Preseason or no preseason, I think it's always fun to see these New York teams play anyhow. Now, you know, I know you were talking about the Kayvon Thibodeau block. So, Danielle, ironically, Jerry Ball of the Detroit Lions suffered a chop block, ironically, against the New York Jets at the Pontiac Silverdome, and they created that chop block rule. So I think it's one of those things where I do believe that you have to see that chop block rule implemented, and I'm just glad that Kayvon Thibodeau dodged the bullet, so to speak. He's only out for a few weeks, because you're right. It looked a lot worse than it turned out to be. 3 or 4 weeks, at least, you know, you collect a sigh of relief there. You really do. But what I saw with Jerry Ball years ago was really bad, and ironically, it occurred against the Jets. So, you know, and Kayvon Thibodeau was a guy that I know the Lions were considering, but luckily Aiden Hutchinson fell in our lap. But I think you got a good player there. I really do. And he comes from the University of Oregon. So sky's the limit. You just have to keep him on the field. So with that said, let's talk about Brian Daboll, obviously the new coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good track record, Buffalo, developed Josh Allen. And I know that Wellington Mara does believe that with Brian Daboll they can fix Daniel Jones, and you're right, Saquon Barkley does need to stay healthy. So with that said, how much confidence do you have in Brian Daboll that he will be able to get that situation straight and that you can avoid Daniel Jones being in the bust category? Because it's not his fault that you had Joe Judge running the ship for a while, and no quarterback, and I don't care who you are, can have different head coaches and different offensive coordinators and expect to succeed, let alone Joe Judge.
Here's my feeling on Jones, and this is I didn't feel he should have been picked where he was. I thought he was picked way too high. You know, there was a little too much of a Dave Brown callback with him. But That being said, I don't know if he's gotten a fair shake. The difference between a Josh Allen and a Daniel Jones, put skill level, all that stuff aside, just look at it from the aspect of the Bills built their offense around Josh Allen, to whereas Daniel Jones was put into the offense and then expected to perform around the offense. Those are two very different scenarios. So for Daniel Jones, I think what they need to do is now look at his skill set and give him the right tools. I don't know if, you know, obviously Joe Judge didn't do that. They built it. They built everything around Saquon instead of building it around Jones. So I want to see if, because Daboll built Josh Allen, can he do the same for Daniel Jones? I don't know. If you look at his, if you look at Jones' completion percentage, you know, in 2019, I think he was somewhere almost at 62%. Then in 2020, you know, he lifted to maybe 62.5, around that, almost 63. And then in 2021, he was at 64, but yes, he was injured. The difference with Jones is, overall, is the Giants have always gone with a pocket quarterback. They've never gone with a mobile quarterback. And all their coaches, they've never done that. Jones is mobile. He's the most mobile we've ever really had when you think about it overall. Can we finally kind of make that change? It's really going to come on to, you know, Daboll. Can he fix these things and kind of mold the offense to Jones? We're going to have to wait and see, because we still have the same wide receiving core. It's not like we picked up these new wide receivers that you're like, oh, they're different. They've worked with this one. They've worked with that one. We haven't. I mean, Sterling Shepard, how many times can Shepard get injured? He's right. Injured every single season. I don't think the guy's ever played a full season. Is he talented? Yeah, but he's always injured. We haven't brought in a new tight end. I mean, Ingram, okay, but he's another one. He's a China doll.
Right.
And we got rid of him. But we haven't brought in new schemes that I'm going, oh, okay, we're kind of playing up to what Jones can do. So I think we're still evaluating him. From what I've seen from Davis Webb and Tyrod Taylor, they look like they're playing more to the strengths, but I think it's because they're new. I don't know with Jones. I really have to wait and see. My thing is, looking at it, is you have Daboll, you have Schoen. They're looking to develop their legacy. Why would you keep the old guys from the old regime? Because you're going to look at them and say, I've elevated them.
Well, that's true. So, well, you bring a couple of other interesting points. Again, you talked about two question marks. Kenny Galladay is certain one. But think about it this way, Danielle. If, and again, you're talking about the owner, Wellington Mara, what is hoping, and like anything else, that nobody, if you draft a quarterback and they become a bust, that sets you back 5 years. I've been covering this league mm-hmm. for a lot of years, Danielle,
yep.
And I'm telling you, if a guy like Daboll can fix, you know, Daniel Jones, he looks like a genius. Now, remember another thing, though. Daniel Jones had a heck of a coach in David Cutcliffe at Duke, is what he did.
Yes.
So, and David Cutcliffe mm-hmm. Obviously worked with the Mannings. And, of course, you ever heard of a guy named Eli Manning? Guess what? He was pretty good, wasn't he? Okay. So,
exactly.
The bottom line is, you know, when you have a David Cutcliffe there, yeah, I mean, Brian Daboll looks like a genius if he's able to get Jones fixed. And that way he can focus on other aspects of your football team. So I have a lot of confidence in Brian Daboll, not only because of what he did in Buffalo, but before he got the Buffalo job, he also worked with the Alabama Crimson Tide under Nick Saban. And guess what? At last I heard, mm-hmm. okay, Nick Saban knows how to develop pretty good players. And at last I saw, he does have a few national championships. He probably has more national championships than we have fingers on our one hand, right? You get the drill? And
right.
I'm not a math major, but I can kind of figure out that he has a good background here. So, yeah, I hope and pray that Daniel Jones gets work, but you can't have a mass unit of receivers at all. And, of course, remember, this is the final preseason weekend, so you hope and pray that some of these other guys will become available so that you can bolster your depth as well. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm willing to give it a TBD, but I hope and pray for Giants fans that Brian Daboll can go out there and be the guy that goes ahead and gets Daniel Jones. And, yeah, we all know David Gettleman will never see another general manager job. He wrecked Charlotte, and he didn't do any wonders up in the Giants either. So he's D-O-N-E.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we all know what that means, right? We don't have to hashtag that.
Yep.
So figure.
We're good with that. We're good with that. I agree. I mean, I'm hopeful at this point. I just have not – I don't believe I have seen – the full potential of Jones yet, so I want to see where it's going to go. You know, I know there's been talk like, is OBJ going to come back to New York? I know he sent out that cryptic tweet or that Instagram where he was like, I miss my crew. Yeah, we'll see kind of thing. But I think it's the same thing. I think OBJ is sitting there like, I need to see what Jones can do before I can see if there's chemistry, like what's going on. I think Jones needs to find his chemistry with his wide receiving core. He needs more protection, especially on the left. And he won't feel rushed to make those interceptions if he's got more time. And also the injury. He's had two neck surgeries now. He's going to be a little more hesitant to run. That's first. I mean, that hit last year, that was rough.
Right.
I mean, when that man got up and he was still staggering, you know, there's been some major hits, some concussions. I think we want to just wait and see. But I am hopeful. He now has a coach that is smarter, knows how to run an offense, and can develop. So let's wait and see. He looks, like I said, all I can say is adequate right now. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the hope, the savior has returned. No, I can't say that right now. But am I hopeful? Yeah, you know, I'm optimistic at this point in time for the Giants. Let's see what we can do.
Danielle,
well, I think
OBJ is going back to play with the Los Angeles Rams and Matthew Stafford. Take it to the bank. Okay, go ahead, Bruce.
You don't think he'll go to Buffalo?
Yeah, it was good.
No, I don't. I believe that he found a niche out with the Rams. I really do. I think he's going back to play with Stafford. You know, the guy's busted up right now. He won a Super Bowl ring. He's in a beautiful stadium. Why would you want to disrupt anything at all that worked out well? I believe that's just my feeling. And, you know, being a Detroit guy, Stafford got a new lease on life there. And why would you not want to go back to a Super Bowl winning team with a heck of a quarterback that, you know, as the old Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. If you go ahead and get open, Matthew Stafford will throw it to you. You get the narrative here? I believe that OBJ, when it's all said and done, Danielle, is going back to the Rams. I don't see him going to the Giants. No way. I don't see him even going to Buffalo.
No.
Who in their right mind would want to play in a cold climate? What's that?
I could see him possibly going to Buffalo. I do. I think he likes the because I think he sees more longevity with Josh Allen. That's the only thing I possibly see with Buffalo.
Well, okay.
I could
you
see
know
longevity
what?
In the chemistry with Allen.
It's okay for us to disagree, Danielle. I have no problem.
People
disagreed with me for 42 years in this business. You won't be the first, and you will definitely won't be the last.
Yeah, I think if Daniel Jones gets a little better in that division, he could be maybe the second best quarterback in that division. I mean, I think Prescott was a little better, though. I don't think Prescott's worth the money he's getting paid. I don't see that Jalen Hurts or Carson Wentz is any better if Jones lives up to his potential. And it's the offensive linemen that you signed are steady veterans, but not spectacular. And the key with the Giants too is what they put like 15 point something points on the board as an average last year. That doesn't fly.
Yeah.
So I do think that you have a chance, but. I think he's better than has the potential to be better than Jalen Hurts, and I don't see Carson Wentz lasting a full season. He gets injured too much, so I do think that the Giants are going to get better, but it's a shaky situation. And how do you think what's your defense like this year? I'm very unfamiliar with them.
The defense looks good. But our defense, it's also going to depend on Wink Martindale, what they're doing. But so far, the defense, what I've seen in preseason, we look good. It's, you know, but our defense has always been, it's been more the backbone, but we haven't gotten back to the old Giants D. Like, and when I mean old Giants D, like, you know, what we used to be, where we had that pass rush, that has not returned. And I'm waiting to see that in preseason. There's nobody standing out where I'm like, oh, that's secondary. Look at it. You know, we got rid of Adore. We got rid of, you know, a couple guys where I was like, yeah, I think we should have kept them. But, okay, let's wait and see. I think tomorrow's game is really going to see what that pass rush looks like, because I'd like to see more pressure on the quarterback. I have not seen that come out yet. You know, I haven't seen a secondary since the Wills that make me go, oh, all right, we're back to that, you know, you got to think where you're going to throw, because if you throw to the edge, the cornerbacks are coming. So I think we have to kind of wait and play that out and see what the safeties are doing, see what how we're playing in deep coverage. So we'll kind of play out tomorrow because we haven't really seen Martindale's play, you know, how it's really – how he's developing. I know during the joint practices this week, they said it looked a little bit better. But, you know, against the Patriots, I know, you know, Belichick was kind of laughing that we had him on check a little bit. But I'm interested to see how it kind of plays out. I think all the attention has been on the offense because of is Tyrod going to take the number one spot? Is Jones going to, you know, we've put so much attention on that. But I think there's been almost a quiet confidence, which I'm interested in. That kind of makes me smile a little bit. Like, all right, nobody's talking badly about it. Nobody's like, oh, my God, look at the Giants D. But that's usually when it starts moving up and we start gaining a little momentum.
Let's face the reality, okay, if Daniel Jones becomes the second-best quarterback in that division, it's by default, and it's because of Brian Daboll. And I do want to say that Tyrod Taylor is a very capable quarterback. He will not hurt you. He's been a journeyman for a long time, and this is the kind of guy that will always be able to keep you in a lot of games. So I think they certainly got a fine quarterback just in case, but, you know, like anything else. You know, to think that he could be the second-best quarterback in that division, again, it's a Brian Daboll factor if he does. I agree with Bruce, okay. Carson Wentz is on his last leg. Jalen Hurts, I still need a bigger sample size before I'm willing to go out there and have more confidence in him. Dak Prescott's okay, but, I don't think you could go deep in the postseason with him anyways. And Daniel Jones, well, I think he's the wild card in this whole thing. So, you know, Danielle, I want to ask you a couple of – I've done a little bit of homework on you a little bit, so I'm going to throw a couple of unique questions your way. All right, you ready? I know that you're a passionate
guy,
and I love it. But, you know, as I was doing my homework on you, I was intrigued by a lot of different things. And me being a creative guy, okay, I can certainly relate to what you're all about. So I want to talk about Dwayne Rock Johnson, okay? And I know that you performed in front of President Clinton, Dwayne Rock Johnson. You collaborated with him and Vincent Lynn. So what was that like being able to work with him? And then I got a great follow-up about Johnson.
I worked with The Rock on when it was still the WWF. It was just before they changed the WWE on the first Super Bowl commercial they did. Back. This is probably 1999, 2000. And it was a commercial where it was supposed to show that the wrestlers were really the logical ones in the building, but it was all the employees that were nuts. And he was absolutely fabulous. I was making him do the eyebrow thing the whole day long. We played video games together. He was great. Vincent Lynn was one of the stunt fight coordinators on it. So it was, I couldn't say enough nice things about him. I came up to maybe his hips when we stood next to each other. He dwarfed me completely. And he was probably the nicest guy. He was the nicest wrestler. I worked with China. I worked with Triple H, Mankind. The Undertaker was there. Who else? I think that was it to start. Yeah, I think that was everybody. Actually, McMahon was there toward the end of the day. But, yeah, we were just all running through. We had full free reign over the entire headquarters. And we were running through the buildings, jumping off things, going through plate glass windows, all this kind of cool stuff. And Vincent was, like I said, the fight stunt coordinator. I was Vincent's protege at the time. And so he brought me in to do some of the stunts and some of the fights. I ran through, like, some things that were on fire, all that kind of stuff. But The Rock was absolutely lovely. He walked through a corridor while people were getting thrown out of conference rooms. And he was great. And at one point, I think they wanted to throw me, and he actually stepped forward. And he was like, "You're not throwing the littlest one out of the door." He's like, "No, we're not going to do that." And he kind of winked at me. And he's like, "Let's leave her over there." He was like really sweet, very nice. And we play video games together. Great guy.
All right. So with that said, okay, when we talk about Dwayne Rock Johnson, what do you think of Johnson you know, in his revival of the XFL, Act 3. You talked about the Giants trying to fortify themselves with good talent, and, of course, we just had the USFL and now the XFL being recreated. I think that anything that Dwayne Johnson gets his hands on, he turns it into gold. We know about the Vince McMahon phenomenon where the XFL failed twice, and now he's invested in the Act 3 of the XFL. They're getting set to relaunch it again next year. So do you think that Johnson's involvement with the XFL is going to make the third time a charm with the XFL?
Could be very interesting. The reason I say this is twofold. One, I had developed a helmet to help with tracking concussions and subconcussive hits and different things to kind of put the power back in the player's hands. And I had brought it to a very big sports company who does equipment. And at the time, they only did soft equipment, you know, shirts and things like that. And they told me, as great of an idea as it was, they were very interested. We don't manufacture things for this. But they called me back and said, while we don't think, they said, bottom line was they were like, you won't get this past Goodell as a woman. They said, you need a player. They said, but you could get this into the XFL. And that was, they said, they are putting so much money into player safety. This would be perfect for them. And that was just as The Rock was getting involved. And they said he's so into player safety and being safer than the NFL. This would be perfect. And I thought that was a really interesting point, that he was making it safer. And that was one of his key factors, was to put the power back in the player's hands. So I think, given that, it made me look at it, the whole XFL, totally differently, that one of their main concerns was player safety, giving informed consent back to the player, things like that. So I do think that The Rock, as the fact that he was a player, will probably come from a different point of view. Being a former college athlete, being a wrestler, and knowing how banged up the body gets, I think he will take it from a different point of view. And I think from a success level, he's got the connections. That's not even, you know, and he's got the likability factor. I think it could be very successful. But from a safety standpoint, I think he will take it from a totally different perspective. And that makes it more intriguing for me.
Well,
I don't know how it'll go with the fans, but, you know, it could be interesting.
Well, I mean, nobody's oblivious to the fact that the NFL's had to settle a lot of major lawsuits here with the players. I know a guy who actually used to play for the Dallas Cowboys and was a general manager of the Michigan Panthers named Mike Keller. And a lot of people have those concussion lawsuits, so it's a mess. So I admire Rock with what he's doing. He's University of Miami guy, so he's in my backyard. So there's no question, in my opinion, when you're an athlete and you're taking a defunct league twice, you're trying to do something better with not only developing players with safety issues, and you've got the NFL backing behind you to do it. Everybody's looking for another developmental league where you can go ahead and improve safety, and I think that's where Roger Goodell, they had the utmost admiration, which is why I wanted to bring the XFL up, because I know you had a connection with Johnson in the first place. You follow me? And this is a perfect opportunity, since we're talking a lot of football. And to me, Rock, he's just an amazing individual. He really is. And you know, I'm pulling for this guy to do well with the XFL, but I think that player safety doesn't really get recognized any more than it does, even though it does. Follow me? They need to continue to build on it, because here's the deal. All these players are getting bigger, okay, and I mean bigger, okay? We're not talking Dick Butkus at 250 pounds. We're talking about 300 to 400 pounds landing on you, and my goodness, you have to bring the equipment up to speed or you're in trouble. And I think that's why when you bring up these valid points about what he's doing and the fact that you've worked with him in the past, you really got me intrigued about the XFL phenomenon and connecting Johnson. So I'm glad that you were able to provide our fans out there with a lot of information about the fact that football needs to improve. This isn't the Vince McMahon, he hate me gimmick, okay, where you're going to go out there and produce a Tommy Maddox and all that, and then let alone not make it through a pandemic. We're talking about Act 3 is what we're talking about, and Rock's involved with Andy Garcia. And that's why it's so imperative that they are able to make these strides. I'm sure you probably noticed all these guys are dying of ALS, right? And all those things because of all the excessive hits.
I think what it is, it's the excessive hits are one thing, but we have to look at the fact that it's the subconcussive hits. There's one thing with the excessive hits that we all see. I mean, think about when a wide receiver catches the ball, hits the ground, and we watch his, you know, his head bounce back and forth. And we're like, oh, bad hit. Oh, you know, and we're all like, or we hear the crunch and we're like, damn, oh, you know. But it's those subconcussive repetitive hits that we have to look at and go, ooh, okay, you know, there's several of them. And the fact is, you know, like in 2012, there was over 3,000 former NFL players that sued the NFL in a joint lawsuit, you know, saying, hey, you guys hid a lot of stuff about CTE and all this stuff. But how many times does a player go on the sideline and go, okay, so I got hit like four times here, and then on this play I got hit three times here, and they're not adding it up, you know, like they don't do that. You know, why would you? You're in the middle of the game. So I think what it is we need a way for the players to take back some of that power. You know, there is technology, because the fact of the matter is unless you're going to seatbelt your brain, there's no way to really protect it. We can put those stupid guardian caps on your head as much as you want in practice, and that's fine, well and good. Is it really doing something? Like, we won't know until the research and years later, and then they'll look back and go, okay, well, maybe it was 5%. You know, okay, well, does that really help them? The first thing the NFL has to do is we have to give these guys more health coverage, more medical coverage, you know, all that stuff after they're done. Like, that would be transparent. Them putting out, like, stupid commercials, that's not helping anybody, you know? Like,
yeah, but Danielle, do you really think, Danielle, okay, that when a player gets concussed multiple times, that he wants to come off the field anyways because he's worried about losing his job, and a coach will think that way? And we have to get them to think that they're not going to lose their job because of a head injury, which is why we're going through all this in the first place. So everything you're saying is totally on point, and I'm agreeing with you all the way. But what few people don't understand, the fans and media don't know, is these guys are wobbling like wobbles, where you don't wobble, you don't fall down, and they're getting 2, 3, 4 concussions. I've even had a couple this year because of a bad fall, and I tell you what, I take concussions a whole lot more seriously than I've had a couple in a short time, so you can only imagine what it would be like for a player. But when a guy's fearful of his job and next man up, then obviously he doesn't want to come off the field, and that's, you know, it works against them. And I think that's where these guys have to go out there and realize the lawsuits and all that. So,
I think what it is, one of the helmets I had suggested was something that measures the smaller subconcussive hits you take during a game. And almost like you guys have seen the glow sticks, right? Your kids probably have them, you know, during trick-or-treating and things like that, that would leak into the face helmet, the face mask, and glow. When you've taken so many hits that the next hit you take, okay, puts you over the edge, to where if the score is 30-4 and you're in the fourth quarter, do you really want to go back in the game and risk that? And it would put the informed consent back in your hand as a player. And the players union can then, the players association can then work to protect you from retaliation. I think things like that, to where we all have to get on the same page. And I don't want to get like on a soapbox about this, but there are certain things we have to do to protect the players, because at the end of the day, we as the fans are being entertained by them. You know, so we have to do something for these guys at the end of the day. And maybe that's something that the XFL can work toward to show as a model that this can work. And that's something that maybe The Rock can do, you know? It's just something to think about.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's
good to have an outside person besides the normal NFL guys, because, I mean, I personally am not impressed with Roger Goodell, and to have somebody like The Rock doing that and maybe experimenting with what you're talking about as far as the medical aspect, I think is a good thing. And maybe the NFL will apply those things in the future. I think it would be with a different commissioner, though. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think Goodell is way too set in his ways. I think he's doing all that stuff. I think he's antiquated in some of his protocols. I think there's more we could even do to stop, using unnecessary challenges on wide receivers. Like, why do we not have magnets and sensors in the outbound outline? You know, to where if you could even use paint to where a wide receiver steps out, a sensor goes off using magnets and then alerts the referees that he stepped out. Why aren't we using simple technology like this that would cost pennies on the dollar to alert it instead of a coach having to use a challenge flag and slow down the game? There's just simple things we could use to help, and that costs the stadiums next to nothing. I mean, you use a copper wire, you bury it 6 inches down. You can put paint on the sneakers that do not change the weight of the sneakers, how the sneaker bends, nothing like this. And then if the wide receiver steps out of bounds, you'll know. And then we don't have to waste a challenge on this stuff. I mean, like, there's little things we could do like this that would help speed up the game and not waste a challenge. And then you have the challenge for when you really need it. You know, like little things like that that we could do that I just think Adele is like, no, I'm not going to do that for whatever his reasons are, because I think some of it is just antiquated. You know, those are just my, like I said, my opinions, but okay. You know, so right. I just think we could move with the times.
So, you know, Danielle, I want to go ahead and transition, since we're talking about hand injuries, to another interesting thing that's come up. I know you have a passion for martial arts, and since we do a lot of sports, this is a sports show, I want to get your opinion on your thoughts of the UFC and what Dana White is doing. This is another major contact sport there where the head does get injured. And I don't know, I'm a boxing guy, so I've never been a UFC guy. I did meet Chuck Liddell, super nice guy, and I give Dana White a lot of credit.
Nice.
Yeah, he does. So what are your thoughts about UFC and what Dana White is doing?
I think the UFC has gotten to the point where it's become a little bit of a sideshow, you know, kind of thing. I appreciate what Dana White started doing. Like when we initially, when he transitioned and things were going, even like the reality show, when Ultimate Fighter first started, thought it was like kind of cool. I mean, I watched it religiously. I thought it was great. Now I think we're just getting to the point where, I don't know. It's not what it used to be. Does that make,
right.
You know, it's just kind of all right, you know, it's the next thing. I'm not, you know, I love seeing the women fighting. I think it's great. You know, I'm all for it. I'm like, cool, we're in there. Good job, ladies. You know, more power to you. But I think it's lost some of its shine, some of its glossiness. I just don't think, you know, it's obviously it's not the days of Ken Shamrock and that kind of stuff. Even Tito.
Right.
We've lost a little bit of it, but I don't know. It just seems like a bit of a circus, a bit of a sideshow thing. And the promotion, he's got his hands everywhere. I think we need to pull back and refocus a little bit. My opinion
on
it.
You know what?
You know, that's how I'm
I'll give you an acronym that you can use from now on that you'll remember from this show. Are you ready for it? Okay, Danielle, GMT. You know what that stands for? Ready?
No. Give it to me.
Great minds think alike. Okay. I have no use for the UFC. And I grew up with boxing, and I took a picture a long time ago with Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, and those are my heroes. I've been against you, UFC crowd, but let me tell you something. I have zero use for the UFC. I don't like it. I understand it takes a certain skill set to do it. You don't protect the head. There's a lot of ways to get injured, and I'm just waiting at some point or another to see. Unfortunately, I hope it never happens, where more fatalities will occur. So real people that say, you know what? Get this sport out of here. But yet they're getting away with it because the rounds are shorter, 4 or 5 rounds instead of 10, 12, 15 of them like I did. So I'm with you. I have no use for it, and I think it's a circuit sideshow. But since we got on the XFL topic and the head injuries, I felt like in my mind this was a perfect topic, and you seem like you're intellectually able to more than come up with insightful answers, and I'm glad that you were able to come up with those. Thank you. Appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. I'm there with you. I am concerned about major injuries. You know, I mean, we've had deaths training. We know about the UFC deaths training and things like that. But I do worry about it. It's not the days of, you know, like when Gina Carano was first starting or even when Ronda Rousey, you know, things like that. I do worry. I look at it and, I've trained, you know, I look at like boxers like Christy Martin and things like that. It's very different. So just not, you know, I do know some fighters who were on the UFC reality show in the very beginning. So I'm just, it's very different. And I've trained in some of it before. But it's maybe not my cup of tea. I'll watch a fight, you know, and I'll sit there and comment and critique and everything like that. But you know, it's entertainment, but I think that's what it's become now.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you, years ago, I got confession to you. I wouldn't spend money on pay-per-view. When I was married, my first marriage, my wife nearly bit my head off, okay, for buying the Tyson Holyfield fight for $49. Oh. And I saw these two guys fight out in Vegas for 11 rounds. So if you think I'm spending money on pay-per-view, then sorry, religious people, Santa Claus is Jewish, not happening, okay, and not doing it.
Yeah.
So with that, okay, Danielle, I am impressed with your martial arts career. For all you folks to realize that Danielle, obviously your 1999 World Martial Arts Hall of Fame inductee, that's impressive in its own right. I know you're a WKA World Champion, silver medalist 2008. Plus, you know, you have a lot of martial arts tournament as well and wins as well. Mm-hmm. And even what's more interesting about it is not only did you do well, but you did it over a sustained period of time, 8 or 9 years. So with all that said, mm-hmm. okay, I have a mm-hmm. couple questions for you. Number one, define sure. for me what a fantasy novelist is, because I admire a person with a lot of creativity. Like I told you at the beginning of the show, with your YouTube channel and a platform to doing it, but I'd like to know what a fantasy novelist is, and give me an exact definition of that, because your martial arts career is nothing short of outstanding.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. A fantasy novelist is someone who writes in the fantasy realm, meaning that they usually write with a high magic, a magical system that is clearly defined, and a world builder. So everything has a religion, society, currency, monarchy, something to that, and it takes place in a realm outside of Earth as we know it. The Rings, Game of Thrones, something to that extent. It's considered high fantasy. So there are usually mythical creatures, most likely dragons, unicorns, that kind of thing. And the time frame can mimic or happen at the same time, but what is happening is in another realm. So in my case, I write the Birth of the Fae series, and my time frame is from the beginning of time, but there's another dimension that mimics Earth's time. And my realm is the Veil, as I call it, which happens side by side simultaneously as what's happening during normal Earth time. So, you know, some of the time happens during Tudor England, but it's happening simultaneously. And I have dragons, and I have a magical system and all those things, and a monarchy of the light and dark fae. We have the Court of Light and the Court of Dark.
Interesting. Okay. I'm very impressed with any of that fantasy or fiction writing for that matter. Does it just come to you and all of a sudden you have this flow that just keeps going? And I mean, because I respect novelists because I know I can't do it. Or fiction novelists, I say. How long does it take you to this process go on? Do you have writer's block for a little bit and then get back to it? I'm just curious.
Thank you. I don't have writer's block. Knock on wood, that has not happened yet. I started writing this, and to this day, I still don't know why I chose the fae or fairies. I wrote it because I was trying to entertain a patient who was undergoing treatments, IV treatments. And he just needed a distraction. So I just orally started telling him a story. He was a Ravens fan, and we would debate football all the time. And so that's how we became close, really. So I just, you know, started telling him a story, and out of my mouth came the fae. And I just orally was telling him things off the top of my head. And he was like, you need to go write this down. And as a joke, I said, during a battle scene, he said, oh, they were bleeding everywhere. And I said, yes, they were bleeding blue because they're Giants fans. I made a joke like that. And then all of a sudden, all my fae bled blue. And, you know, that was like, we made a joke that was the thing, is that all fae are Giants fans. But no, it just kind of comes to me. And I write the first three books of the series. I hand wrote, and I just sat there writing in my journal kind of thing, because I didn't know how to write. It's not like I sat down and was like, I'm going to be a writer someday. It wasn't like that. I just started writing, and I would write like whatever scene, and then I'd be like, oh, they're going to want to know who this person is and where they came from. And I'd pick up another journal and start writing another scene. And then I'm like, oh, but this doesn't make sense. I'll go back to journal. until I had the three books. And then I sat down and started typing. So it probably took me to finish the first draft of the first book about 9 months, give or take. And then from beginning to end, like finished, totally done, 2 years to write Locked Out of Heaven, which was the first book. And then go from there. And then I just started cosplaying as my characters to make sure their costumes made sense, things like that. And that's kind of how I started doing everything. It just all kind of happened.
So with that said, wow. Danielle, okay, I know that your another passion you have is a nurse. So how many ideas for writing do you actually get during your nursing career? Because that, to me, I've always felt that nurses, from a professional standpoint, were undervalued, not only pay-wise, but respect-wise. But can you just imagine how many stories you can come up when you deal with the different types of people, whether, you know, they're near passing or whether they're just in there for a day or so. Yeah, you know, I've always been a firm believer, and I've been writing for 42 years too, that, you know, when you write, you have a feel for it. You know how to command the language. And if you write well, you speak well. But I guess my question is, how many ideas for writing do you actually get from your nursing career? I can imagine there's got to be a wealth of them.
When I was nursing, funny thing is, my next I've written 6 books in Volume 1 of Birth of the Fae. My next 3 books in Volume 2, most of them are all from nursing because they all deal with that patient and what happened in the IV room, and it's still a fantasy. It's urban fantasy because it takes place in modern day, so that's why it's considered urban fantasy. But most of that is, like, there's medical stuff and shadow government, and that all really came from nursing. It's funny because one of my nursing instructors actually read most of the medical stuff and did kind of a developmental edit of it to make sure, like, I was right on with what I was doing with all this genetic stuff and things like that. But a lot of that came from it. And my patient inspired the protagonist, the male protagonist, Agent Graham, in the next volume, Birth of a Succubus. He is, Agent Graham is my patient. I put him right in the book, and he jokes because he's like, when's my literary persona coming out? And he kind of laughs. But that all came from him. So, you know, it does. The people I meet, they're really in my books. In the Birth of the Fae series and Locked Out of Heaven, my dad is the metal gnome Hoggle because my dad works on bikes, and he's a quarter-mile bike racer. So I made him, since he builds all his bikes, he's the metal gnome of the Court of Light. You know, that's my dad. So I do,
right.
Everybody I meet is usually in my books.
Wow.
In some capacity.
Pretty neat. Amazing. How about that, folks? You get a tip from Danielle Orsino. If anybody she meets, that's a good thing for me when I wonder if I get around to writing the book that I've been talking about. Never got around to doing it, so I'll have to go out there. After Mark Mancini sends me the transcript, I'll have to listen to this show over and over and over, knowing that I probably turn your head into a spinning top that you've gone in 9 million directions, only to get down what I ultimately do. I guess the only claim to fame I'll have in a book, though, Danielle, is one of my co-hosts. Has actually has written a book with pictures, and I'm in it twice with Jimmy Connors and Muhammad Ali. But hopefully one of these days
I'll
get around to do it. But what's that?
That's pretty cool.
What's that? Yeah, hey, not
the
worst thing in the world, right?
Muhammad Ali. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I got news for you. I wrote a story many years ago in Miami. I spent a week with the champ. And, you know, at that time he was at the beginning of the Parkinson's disease syndrome. And if a picture's worth 1,000 words, he didn't have many left. But I'll tell you, if you ever saw my Facebook page with a young 19-year-old with the champ with a vicious right hand over my jaw, then you can that's for sure that. You know what? And then after him, though, there are a lot of boxers like Sugar Ray Leonard, James Lightsout, Tony, and Chuck Wepner, that if I ever get by a picture with a boxer, you've got to put your fist underneath my jaw because everybody has a crack at it. Not that you couldn't figure that out in about 50 short minutes anyways, but it is what it is. But, yeah, no, so, I mean, I've never written them, but I've been at least one, and all you need to do is look me up, and I'll show you exactly where those photos. My goodness. I mean, but, yeah, that's okay. My jaw's been battle-tested by the greatest writers in the world. But, no,
I
commend you for writing in your creativity. I'm impressed with everything, Danielle, that I've seen with you today. Mark my word.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. It's definitely a lot of fun, and you know, I love writing. Even my Giants made it into the book. Besides having my save bleed blue, I do have a story about how I, why I even love the Giants, and it's a true story, and that made it into volume two. So even my Giants have made it into a fiction book. So, you know, but it's always
Danielle,
in there.
Life could be a lot worse. Remember, I grew up with the Lions, and I've covered the Lions for a lot of years, and the last time that they won an NFL championship was in 1957, 5 years before I was born. So, you know, it could be worse with the Giants.
True.
At least you've been to a Super Bowl and won a few. But to the Lions' credit, they got me in four Super Bowls, and, you know, I've had an unbelievable time covering Barry Sanders, Calvin Johnson, to name a few. So life could be worse if you're in one of the four cities that never been to a Super Bowl, the Texans, the Browns, the Lions, and the Jaguars. At least they had the legs of Bill Parcells. Every great assistant coach that went through us ultimately became a head coach, and they weren't with us, okay? Bill Belichick, once upon a time, was an assistant with the Lions. Don Shula, you ever heard of him? And the list goes on and on. So it ain't all that bad, Danielle. My goodness, okay. Red, white, and blue is a good thing.
I just had to survive the Dave Brown era, okay? So
it
has been worse. I just had to get to Dave Brown. You know, it could be a lot worse.
You missed Jim Delgazzo. But that's a little bit further back. And also, I still, when people always say, ask me the question about who's the best defensive player of all time, you know, there's always arguable. Despite his off-the-field flaws, I still have to say Lawrence Taylor. What do you think?
Yes. I have to agree with that. I still say, look, taking everything off the field, just whatever the issues are off the field, he still changed the position and made it what it is today. He was the prototype. Same thing. And I understand it's an offensive position, but if you look at Mark Bavaro, I do not think we would have the Gronk prototype of a tight end without Bavaro. Bavaro made it what it is. We would not have that physical tight end without Bavaro. He was first. So I still look at that whole 86 Giants, and I'm like, they really changed a lot, you know, and kind of set up what we have now. And I don't think they get
yeah.
– you know, I don't think Bavaro gets – you know, the credit that he deserves.
Well, you know,
those were epic battles. Cause I was always around for those, the Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells battles. And that was an exquisite time to watch football. And those are nail biting games all the times around the playoffs. And Taylor was fantastic. In fact, that whole linebacking crew was great. Carson Banks, Pepper Johnson, and Lawrence Taylor. I'm hard pressed to come up with a defense that good, period.
Well, Danielle, let me tell you this.
At
Super Bowl 33, I covered that when John Elway was there, and that's when Lawrence Taylor was selected to the Hall of Fame. I actually met Lawrence Taylor, and that's one of the events I used to cover. So I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that if I were going to put him amongst the top defensive players, Lawrence Taylor will get there. And even Joe Theismann, even though he broke his leg, probably would have a hard time denying that. And I know that when you bring up LT, you got to mention Joe Theismann simultaneously. But I think that Lawrence Taylor was the most intimidating player out on the planet. I always used to like Reggie White, but to me, LT was a game changer. He really was. Don't sit here and tell me that all NFL players after the fact don't have a little hidden track record at when you didn't have it. But in terms of his tenacity and play on the field, to me, Lawrence Taylor reminds me a lot of Dick Butkus. The ferocity for which these guys played, Danielle, is unreal, and that's why they're in the Hall of Fame, because they were impactful players on the defensive side of the ball. Now everybody's playing patty cake, Baker's man with all these quarterbacks. Once upon a time, that was real football, Lawrence Taylor, Dick Butkus style. And I will say this, and I don't like to mention it too often, but the moment is appropriate. I was at the only NFL game in NFL history in 1971 when Dick Butkus was there, when a guy by the name of Chuck Hughes died of a heart attack at Tiger Stadium.
That's
and
right.
It never happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was there. Unbelievable.
Oh, my
so,
gosh.
You know, yeah, and I was
You're
only like 8 years old
at
that it happened, and I had nightmares that night. So I've never forgotten that day in my whole life and realized how life is too short. And when we talk about head injuries and injuries, no matter what we deal with those, there was nothing worse than a guy losing his life due to a heart attack on the field. I'm not trying to make it this depressing show, but I know we've covered more ground than I expected to, and I want to make sure we bring it all to the forefront. So,
no, 100%. Yeah, no, you're totally correct. I mean, injuries are one thing, but yes, you know, at the end of the day, we have to put it in perspective.
Right. Precisely my point.
Totally.
Indeed.
Bruce got more than he can handle today, right, Bruce?
Yeah. I'm overwhelmed. I'm very, very impressed. I've got somebody here who says this question here that Mark just gave me. Zach Campbell is trying to get. He caught 11,000 balls in major league parks. I don't know what this means. Okay, excuse me for the interrupting on that. Anyway, so what are your near future plans here, Danielle?
Right now I have my fifth book coming out. Well, actually it's my sixth because I had a novella, but I have the next book in the Birth of the Fae series coming out on September 20th called A Fae is Done. So I'm really super excited about that. And then I'm actually working on the final book in the volume, in volume one, Forgive Us, which comes out, I believe, tentatively in January. And then I have some appearances. I'm going to be at Louisville Book Fest in late October, October 28th and 29th. I'm going to be at Southern Book Fest in early October. And then I'm going to be at GalaxyCon, which I'm really, really excited about in Columbus, Ohio, the first weekend of December. And I'll be there in full cosplay representing Four Horsemen Publications and their literary lane. So I'll be in Columbus. If anybody wants to come out to Columbus or is in Columbus, I'll be there, and I'm sure that I will have the football games on, you know, somehow. I'll still be there on Sunday, you know, doing football things, but I'm really excited. So I have some appearances coming up, and then, you know, I'll still be writing and getting things done and shooting the cover for book six in between all that, because I'm also on the cover of my books, which was something that my publisher, Four Horsemen Publications, decided to do. So I'm one of the only fantasy authors on the covers as well, and I'm in full cosplay. So each cover features a different fae. And that's
so you mean to tell me you don't publish your own books? You don't do self-publishing? You have a publisher?
No, I do not self-publish. I was actually picked up by Four Horsemen Publications. They met me on a podcast.
At the end of the podcast,
they were like, so what do you do with publishing? And I was like, well, at that time I was published by someone else, but they had never done fiction. I was their first fiction. And then Four Horsemen was like, why don't you come over to our side of the fence? And so I signed with them, and they had seen the first cover for Locked Out of Heaven, the first edition, and it was just type. And they saw my cosplay and was like, why don't we put you on the cover? And I was kind of like, I'm sorry, what? And they were like, yeah. And they just made the cover up and was like, this is what's going to happen from now on, honey. You're the new Fabio of fantasy. You're going on every cover. How do you like that? And that's
fantasy author that's ever been on a cover. I think you're the only one. And I'm noticing right now we're running out of time, and I could keep going on forever with you. I'm stunned. All I can do is listen. Great to have you on the show. A Renaissance woman, if there ever was one. Tell the audience how they can get a hold of you.
Oh, thank you so much, guys, for having me. You can find me at birthofthefae.com, fourhorsemenpublications.com, or on Instagram at birthofthefae_novel. Or if you're looking for your next great book date, you could find me at Bookie Call. And they're on iOS or Android. And swipe right or left and look for Locked Out of Heaven. And check me out there.
Great. And Scott, your turn.
All right. Well, you know what, Danielle? Look for my YouTube channel, South Florida Tribune, Tribune. Then you'll know who you talk to and see what I got, and then I guarantee you'll blow me away. But South Florida Tribune, Tribune, is my YouTube channel. Also, you can find me on Twitter at Tribune South or www.southfloridatribune.com. Let's compare YouTube stories, Danielle, and then you can find out where a lot of the stuff I hit you with today came from. So please look me up and let's stay
Perfect.
In touch.
You got it, guys. Thanks
Indeed,
so much
and,
for having me.
And yes, we are blown away and amazed. I could listen to you all day long, and I could be reached at holyroller91978@gmail.com or on Facebook. Again, thank you, Danielle Orsino.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you, Danielle.
Thanks. Bye-bye.